We asked Ron Van Dam to sum up one of his shows as quickly as possible, and he said,
okay, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that is pretty accurate. That is pretty accurate. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
All right. Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one that they're talking about in the title. Hello, how are you? Good. Here's how we do this. You sit down in a chair, relax. I'll take it from here for a certain period of time, then go back to doing what you were doing before, absolutely nothing. I don't load the dishes in the dishwasher anymore. It's too easy and too fast. I wash each dish by hand. I personally polish each tine of the fork. Yes, I do, because I have the time to do this. We have a great show for you today, so just believe that, and then you'll be fine. if you just accept that as a premise, then I think we'll be able to get through this thing. On Amazon yesterday, as I tend to do frequently now, and I used to like Amazon because everything was like a next day delivery or a 2 day delivery. I thought that was pretty cool. Now everything that I try to order on Amazon is out of stock, expected in November. What the hell? Too many people doing the same thing. That's the problem. Too many people wanting the same product. Too many people doing the same thing. Stop doing what I'm doing, please. I think the internet is a lot slower than it used to be because there's some guy named Don sitting in his basement in Chicago slowing things up. I really think that's true. There's a lot of stupid people on the internet, and it's slowing up the speed. You know it's true. You want to pass the time? Here's a fun game you can play at home. It's called, What the Hell Is This From? I'm serious. It's not a guessing game, really. What you do is you go through your junk drawers. You've got them all over the house. I know you do. I've talked about this before. In every room in your apartment or house, you have a junk drawer. It's where everything goes that you just don't know where to put it. And it accumulates over the years and over a lifetime. It's fun to go through a junk drawer because you're basically saying to yourself, oh, I didn't know I had this. But here's the fun part. If you go through the drawer, you're going to find some stuff in it, and you're going to say to yourself, what the hell is this? It's a part that came from something. When you were assembling furniture or a toy or anything, there's always parts that you don't need or like, this doesn't go with it. So you put it in this junk drawer, and when you go through it, you're going to find parts of things that don't look like anything that you have. Like a missing earlobe. When did my ear fall off? I can't. Oh, that's right. Yeah. In 2006. That's how I remember now. It's fun. You try to figure out what the part belongs to. You obviously never needed it. I don't know if it was extra or you just forgot to put it on or it fell off of something. But you don't know what it is. Then you wonder if it's yours. Somebody breaking into your house or your apartment, putting parts in drawers that you don't really need or don't belong to you. I would like to open up a store when this is all over and call it, what the hell is this? Is it yours? And it's like a flea market kind of thing. And you go into the store and there's like bins and shelves of parts of things that nobody knows what it is. And the idea is you bring your spare, I don't know what the hell it is, parts into the store and you put it in a bin. And if someone's missing something, missing a part of something, you go into this missing parts store and you'll basically find it if we all participate and do this properly. Nobody will ever be missing a part again. And there's a great commodity here because you can charge a lot of money. Oh my God, I've been looking for this part like for months and years. How much is it for this part? $7,000. I have to pay it because it's the only place I can get this part. Yeah, I know. It's my idea. Don't steal it. I have a lot of junk drawers. Oh, my life is full of junk. Oh, it is. You accumulate junk over the years. The stuff that really means something, it's not a lot of that. But the stuff you don't need, tons of it. Got tons of it. Here's how bad it gets. When you put the stuff you don't need, all the junk, in your garbage rubbish bin, and then it's like garbage collection day, and the garbage truck comes by, the rubbish removal truck, I should call it, and the... they dump that big rubbish can into their truck. Sometimes they leave it in the can with a little note. I know we're supposed to pick up the trash, but this is ridiculous. I know, they don't even want my trash. Do you ever put something out on the curb that you just wanted to get rid of? Like an old chair, an old beat up chair, and you figure, there's a lot of poor people in the world. Someone's going to drive by and want that chair. And if they want it, God love you, take the chair. It's free. No strings attached. Just take the goddamn chair. And you leave it there, and like a month goes by, and no one's taking the chair. You start questioning your taste in furniture, don't you? Like, wow, I put out a nice chair, and nobody wants it. My taste must suck. It's like poor people driving by, you know, and they look at the chair. Hey, look, there's a free chair. I don't want that in my house. I don't care. I don't even care that it's a chair and it's free. I ain't taking that piece of crap. When you can't get rid of stuff by putting it out for free on the curb, you got a problem. When the garbage truck won't even take it, you got a problem. Get an interior decorator or something. Why did I even have that chair to begin with? How did that get here? When did I even get that chair? I don't even recognize that chair. I have a lot of chairs in my house. I must like to sit around a lot, but can never figure out which chair I want to sit in, because there's a lot of them. I don't let anybody in my house because I don't particularly care for people as a human race, and I think it's kind of proving itself out. So I don't know why I have so many chairs. Maybe someday someone will want to come over and sit for a while. But I don't want to attract them like that. Come on by anytime you want. Sit down in one of my many chairs. Stay as long as you want. Oh, no, that's not in my vocabulary. I shouldn't have any chairs at all. I'd like to come in and visit you, Ron.
I'm sorry, but there's no place to sit. I don't have any chairs.
You're going to have to stand up for whatever time you're here for, which will make you want to leave earlier. Can I sit on your front steps? Can we talk on your front steps?
Oh, I don't have front steps. I had them removed in case you wanted to sit on them.
Wow. You really don't want people.
No. You kind of caught on, didn't you?
It's not that I don't like people. It's that I don't like them for an extended period of time. You can't hang out for a long time with me.
Someone's going to get hurt. I can't.
There's going to come a point where a conversation is just going to turn into small talk, and I can't do it. I can't do this. I've tried. I went to small talk school when I was a kid, and I failed every single semester.
Ron, you can't do small talk.
I know I can't.
Please teach me how.
Can't. It's just a thing that you can do. It's obvious when you're doing small talk and you're not good at it.
I've tried it.
Yeah, with my neighbors. Hey, how you doing? How's everything? How's the weather for you?
How's the weather for me? You can't even do small talk.
I know, it's obvious. It's like dancing. You go to dancing school. They teach you how to dance. Then you get on the dance floor and everybody says, oh my God, look at that guy. And he even probably took dancing lessons because he's dancing extra stupid, a structured stupid dance. This guy can't dance.
I know. I don't even know why I went to school for it.
Because in life, every once in a while, you have to dance in public.
Oh, really? When does that happen?
Well, like at a wedding. The DJ tells everybody to get up on the dance floor for the first dance.
Yeah, but I don't have to go, do I?
I guess not. I have no reason to dance. The only place I dance is in front of a mirror. And I think I look okay. But on closer inspection, it's awful. It's just awful. I've said this before on the show, and I'll say it again for two reasons. One, because it's poignant, and the other, it takes up a little time. Men, for the most part, don't dance very well. They have movement problems. They're not coordinated. They just can't dance. Basically, because they have the two ball and a penis kind of thing going on, and you can't move that stuff around willy-nilly. And willy-nilly sounds like a group from the 80s, like a musical group from the 80s. Women, every woman looks good, no matter what her size, her weight, her structure, it doesn't matter. When she gets on a dance floor, if you're a female, for some reason, just having a vagina frees you up from all the weight. And they just move really well. They're sexy. They're fascinating to watch. It's an enjoyable movement feast for the eyes. Guys, no, not so much. There's a few of them, but you know what I'm saying? There's a few of them that dance okay, but I don't want to see it for more than like 2 minutes. That's enough. A woman, I can watch her dance all day. Now, I'm a guy. Maybe that's just a thing. I don't know, but to me, it's a fact. I don't care who you are. If you're a woman, you can dance. I know there are a few exceptions to every single rule, but for the most part, I'm quite accurate, let's face it. I'll tell you something else, and this will be my fact of the day.
Ladies and gentlemen, please prepare yourselves. It is that time again for Ron's fact of the day.
Why do we think that when children, young children and babies do something that it's so funny and adorable, and yet when someone over the age of 20 does it, it's not funny, it's not adorable? Why are we age-defying these people? Let me tell you something. When children do something funny, it's because they're not doing it right. They're doing something that they haven't evolved yet really to do properly. And we laugh at it. Oh, that's adorable. Look how inept they are. It's true. We're laughing at ineptitude. It's adorable. And it's the same thing when you get older, you get into your 80s, no matter what you do. Oh, look at that guy walking down the street, 85 years old. Isn't that something? Isn't that adorable? No, it's not adorable. It's sad. And it should be sad when your young children try to do something and they fall down. We laugh. Oh, they are so inept. Isn't that funny? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think. Children are undeveloped people. They haven't found a place in being able to do things yet. Why do we bronze baby shoes? What do we do that for? Why do we want to remember what shoes they wore? We don't bronze their diapers, do we? I guess someone does. Why do we do the shoes? I can't remember the last pair of shoes that I actually saved and said, I want to keep these sneakers that I wore when I was 23 years old. Someday I can look back at it and say, these are the sneakers I wore when I was 23. No, no one does that. No one bronzes their stuff. Unless it's baby shoes. What's up with that? You can't try them on later. They're bronzed. That doesn't make any sense. Anyway, that's your fact of the day. When you're laughing at your children and calling them adorable, it's because they're not able to do things. I don't find that very funny, to be honest with you. One thing I'd never want to be, a nursery school teacher. What, are you kidding me? I know somebody has to do it, but do you think I want to surround myself with ineptitude, with human beings that basically can't do anything? Like I have to help them to the bathroom? That's a career move? Yeah, Ron, because someone has to do it, and some people have more compassion than you do. Well, good. Then I guess we've got that problem solved. God. What I've learned through life, and I'm going to be a little deep here for just a second, and then I won't be anymore. What I learned in life is when you get into your 30s and 40s, and then 50, I think, is when you really hit the realization. It's where you quote-unquote find yourself. And at 50, you say to yourself, I'm not doing that crap anymore because I know I don't want to do it. And then you retire, which is a scary time because you have no more money coming in and our society is based on money and the government can't take care of you. So it's a scary time in life. But there's a freedom involved. I don't have to do that crap anymore. Wow. This is great. It's great and it's not. But at 50, you really can say to yourself, I know what I like and I know what I don't like. No, I don't have a dream before I die to jump out of a plane and skydive. No, I don't have that dream. Stop telling me that I should. Stop telling me that I should climb mountains. Mountains are in the way of things. Climb a mountain when you can just walk around it or drive around it? What's wrong with you? Why would I want it? Because it's an achievement. An achievement. It's an empty achievement. Are you going to walk around telling people, guess what I did yesterday? I climbed to the top of a mountain. Yeah, and like, why is that important to me? Am I supposed to be like really impressed? Well, that's not my reaction. My reaction is, the hell you doing that for? What a wasted effort. No, Ron, you're not understanding. It was an achievement. All right, okay. Unless you have a picture of yourself at the top of the mountain, I don't really care. And even if you do have the picture, I don't want a copy of it, and I don't want to see it. I know you're going to show it to me, and I'm going to have to sound really impressed, But my immediate thought is, why did you bother? Why did you risk your life for something so insignificant to me? All right, kids. We have an author coming up momentarily, and she's written a very interesting book that is quite along the lines of what I've just been talking about. Let's say hello to her right now. Nina Sesamum-Pogue joins us now. She's an author. The book is This Is Not the End, which is a comforting title, actually, because a lot of us think it probably is. But you're a very interesting person, Nina. I was reading your background. You've done a little bit of everything, kind of all on your own. Give me a little bit of your history and all the stuff you've done.
It is a bit of a backstory. I was a gymnast. I was on the U.S. gymnastics team, and then and I didn't make the Olympics. And I was a top recruit that year in the NCAA, and I went to LSU. I was a gymnast at LSU, and then I blew out my knee there and lost my sport. But then I got into television, and I had a long run of being a reporter and a news anchor in television. I at one point got fired from my job and moved to another TV station, and then I had great success there. And then I got into tech, and I had a long 12-year career in software, and we took a company public. So I've kind of jumped from one thing to the next, but usually during big plot twists that I wasn't expecting, and that's sort of what the book is about. Like when you think it's the end, then you have to reinvent yourself.
It's great inspiration. I like inspirational books because it makes me think that, okay, someone else did it. Maybe there's an opening here for me. It all depends on your drive and your personality. But as you say, some things fall in your lap because you kind of deserve them. It's great inspiration. It makes people feel a little bit better about things. Because we do walk around saying to ourselves when we're in a situation, uh-oh, I'm screwed. That's it for me for this particular lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And you just feel like that. I was at the top of my game as a news anchor and very, if you want to use the word popular, sort of big fish in a little pond. But I had great success, and I was let go with budget cuts. And I remember walking, not even knowing what to do with myself and thinking, life was over at the time. I had two kids. I was divorced. I was like, wait, now what? So I used to joke, my life is now a country song. You know, my dog died. Literally, my dog died at the same 3 months. My dog died. I lost my job. My marriage fell apart. So there are moments where we all feel like, holy crap, what's next?
Yeah.
But the book is about how do you, in the really dark times, when you're thinking you can't go on, what are some strategies to get you through that? And it's a little bit of, cognitive behavior therapy, a little stoicism. Sure. I'm a big Ryan Holiday fan, and it's a little bit of faith. And I was all over the map with faith. At one point I decided I was Lakota Indian, where am I? Earth, wind,
fire.
See,
you had a personality though that was embaked in you, because if you were a gymnast and you had gotten that far, and you've got to have determination, you've got to work hard, you've got to be focused, because that's what gymnasts do. I mean, whether they go all the way or not, that's part of them. So I guess you had that quality throughout your life though.
It is really interesting, because as I've gotten older and I've kind of gone down this path and started writing and speaking, the word I kept coming back to is resilience.
Yeah.
And I think from being a gymnast, you're very coachable. Mm-hmm. You can't just keep powering through and doing the same thing over and over. You have to make adjustments. And the definition of resilience is the ability to learn and grow stronger from adversity and adapt in a positive way, figure it out. That's why I think right now a lot of people who are big into persistence and grit, those grit and persistence people are probably struggling harder than the rest of us, because those of us who are can adapt, and you got to accept that you can't do it the same way and you have to make a change.
Right.
I think that's what gymnastics brought to me at an early age, adapt and, make changes and keep getting stronger in a new direction. Mm.
See, in your situation, it's interesting. Your backstory is very interesting because it's almost extreme. Because what you did were incredible achievements that most people always want to do but never could even dream of doing. But the first time with, you know, with the gymnastics, unfortunate. And then with you know, getting into newscasting, and that, and then later on, that was unfortunate. But that was twice. Most people at that point would be destroyed and say, this happens to, it's like going to the convenience store and playing the lottery and you just never win no matter how many times you play. You start to get a little defeated. But you went a third time and even more on your own than the other two. I what gave you that drive on the third time around? Because that's interesting to me.
So I also was involved in a horrific accident in there at one point. And it was a real level set for me.
Yeah.
And kind of dark time for me. And I had to really think about what does the rest of my life look like.
Uh-huh.
And I think one of the things that really helped me, and I think can help others as well, as we are all sitting in this COVID spring, as a friend of mine calls it, I think what really helped me and gave me the ability to do that was to look at my life. And it took me a while to get there. As a long life, you know, you have all these books that say, life is short, grab the ring, you know, go buy the shoes, whatever ridiculous thing. But life is long. You've had a long career. I mean, when you're 19, you feel like, I do the math. When you're 19, you feel like the world's ending because your sport's gone. Because your sport's probably been 85% of what you've known
in
a gym or on a field. So you feel like it's ending. But by the time I'm 50, that's like 28%. And then by the time I'm 100, if I live to be 100 and I need to, you know, eat better and stop drinking during this COVID time. But if I live to be 100, then it would be, you know, less than 20%.
Right.
So the math works for us as we go forward. And when it feels like it's our whole life, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, in my 50s, when my kids left for college, I look at it and I think it was about, you know, a much smaller percentage than parenting had been. Parenting had been 40% of my life by then. So I think one of the things that's comforting for me is to think of that long timeline. And the visual that I use is, a book. I use it in the book, and I use it when I'm talking to folks too who are struggling. And if you look at the book of your life, we're all opened up to a page right now. I'm on a page. You're on a page.
Uh-huh.
This is our like weird crossover moment. We're in each other's books.
Right.
But we're all on a page, and everything's brought us to this page. And the really comforting piece for me is that all the pages ahead are blank, and there's more chapters to come, and there's more stuff, and I get to decide what goes in those pages. I get to decide the language I use. I can call this, you know, that I'm trapped in my house or that something, or I can say, you know, I can use different language and say, hey, it's a worldwide challenge. And I was lucky to have a nice house to sit in. And, you know, you choose your language and you go forward. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You are in control even now. I mean, you can do things that will keep you indeed where you want to be. I love that.
Wash your hands. Stay home.
Yeah. I love the expression that we're all in each other's books right now. That's cool. That's another book title. That's a very cool observation. I like that. Nice.
Okay. Think about it. Like this is this crossover moment where we all will have this chapter. I think it's kind of like, you know, where were you? You know, you go out and have a beer with somebody or whatever, and they say, oh, where were you in 9/11? And like everybody has a story around the table.
Yeah.
This will be that. Where were you in the pandemic of 2020?
No,
what's your story?
It's monumental. But the interesting thing is, see, a lot of people in this country don't really think beyond the borders, and they think, okay, the United States is going through some horrible stuff, and we read about Italy and, of course, China. But they don't realize that it's global. It's almost every country, everywhere, countries you didn't even know existed are going through the same thing right now, and there's been nothing like that in recorded time that we know of that magnitude.
Well, ever, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is something. So you can actually have a conversation with this about something that they went through in Russia, or they went through in Bulgaria. I mean, it's just an incredible.
Or some tiny little.
Yeah.
Some tiny little country you can't even pronounce the name to.
Exactly.
Everyone's so much bigger than 9/11. Everyone's going to have this story.
Right.
We're all going to have this chapter in our book. And I just think we all have a responsibility to do our part during this chapter, to do what we can to, you know, lessen the burden on others or to help. Yeah. But I also think we all have a responsibility to, you know, to ourselves, and that drinking that beer 5 years from now, having this conversation, you want to have a good story. Yeah. No, don't be a jerk. Do something that's worthwhile.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah, because when you look back on it, well, did I waste my time when I could have been doing some incredible stuff during that period? Yeah, I get it. Well, we're going way beyond the book, but it all comes under the category of this is not the end. It's fascinating, and I think we all need this little bit of a boost as far as your story is concerned. It's a path. It's a direction. It's called This Is Not the End. It's available everywhere. Nina, is there a place that people can go to follow you, so to speak? Not in a creepy way, you know.
Sure. You can follow me down the street.
No, don't do that.
Keep your social distance.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can find me on Facebook at Nina Sossaman Pogue Author. I've been putting some videos and fun stuff up there. You can also find me on all the social media. I'm better at some than others, but I'm on Twitter at Nina Soss P. And I'm on Instagram, which I'm super lame at, but getting better at Nina_SP period E.
Okay.
Beautiful. Not my generation, but I'm working on it.
I get it.
So you can find me there. And the book is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm saying I'm the
same. The book is 99. Oh, go ahead.
No, go on. I'm sorry. We got a delay going on. The book is?
I'm sorry. The book is just 99 cents right now. We really wanted to put it out because it's helpful and people have reached out and said it is helping them through this.
We've
made it 99 cents on all your ebook readers. So your Nook or your Kindle or your Apple books. So it's available as cheap as we could put it out there for everyone. And then the regular book, the hard copy, you can get at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million anywhere.
That's fantastic. Nice. Very, very nice of you to do that. Nina, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure speaking to you and meeting you.
It's a pleasure to meet you, too. And maybe sometime 5 years down the road, we'll grab a beer and tell our story.
You got a deal. Well, there you go. Another show down the tubes. I'm going to be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. What do you mean, don't threaten me? What? No, that's not why I said that. No. It's because we can form a relationship that is so distant it's not funny. It's so distant it's not funny. I shouldn't say that. It's so distant that it is funny, right? I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Make me a part of your routine. You don't have to do it the same time every day, but I'm telling you something. Routine's very important, and I'll raise my hand. You can use me as routine. We do a brand new show every weekday. We're on every platform. I don't know what that means. Everything that makes a sound, we're on it. So we're on this thing. So you join me then. Have yourselves a wonderful day, and I wish you peace.